On this episode of the Edge Podcast, ClearEdge CEO and founder Leslie Vickery interviews Carrie Barrett, Chief Operating Officer at Advance Group. As Carrie marks 1 year with the organization, she reflects on the changes she's made since coming on board, how she strikes a balance between operations and the people at the heart of the organization, and what she's been focused on during the ongoing COVID-19 crisis. Leslie and Carrie also touch on her career path in professional services, how she transitioned from sales to management and then the C-suite, and also how she redefines what it means to have it all as a working parent. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi everyone, this is Leslie Vickery, the CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing. I am thrilled to welcome Carrie Barrett, the COO at Advance Group, to the Edge Podcast. Carrie, you are just about to celebrate your first year. For those not familiar with Advance Group, perhaps you could share a little background on the company and how you found your way there.
Sure, sounds great. Good morning and thank you for having me. So yeah, I am. It's been a very fast year with no shortage of activity. That's an understatement. You know, I came to Advance Group through a retained search. I was at a prior organization that had acquired a firm I had been CEO of called Creative Solutions. And when I transferred in or moved into RGP Resources Global and led that integration, then was in an executive role for a period of time at that company, I knew that at some point I would leave and go find the next right opportunity. So explored a number of different things, and I was put in touch with Leo Sheridan, the CEO of Advance Group, and it really started as a conversation, more of a networking relationship as these things go. The company was based in Chicago. It is based in Chicago. I live here in San Francisco and just started having exploratory conversations about, you know, my background and experience and the things that I had done. And then also, of course, his business and how it had grown over the years. And dial forward, it was many, many conversations over many months. And I think what really struck me through those conversations and really built my trust in not only Leo, but in the other executives and the other team members that I met was that this was an organization that had huge promise. It had a terrific legacy, you know, of growth over the years, but also had this really great untapped potential. And I had, you know, really sort of built my career helping organizations grow, seeing organizations get from, you know, kind of remove obstacles to growth and grow. There are a few other key aspects of the role that I felt confident and comfortable, you know, taking on the role and feeling like this was a role that where I would have, you know, the authority and responsibility as COO to be able to impact change, really make things happen. And, you know, again, just collectively, all those things together, including, you know, my relationship with Leo, really led me to taking on this role. And what started out as kind of a, you know, we tried to understand whether it could work with me living here in San Francisco. And we do have a sizable office here in the Bay Area. We started doing it as more of an asset, like to have a presence here in San Francisco, given our office here and the work we do, as well as being able to spend time in Chicago and our other operations. I think Leo started to view that as a strength versus a liability. So that's kind of the quick story on how I got here.
Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing your story, Carrie. I've known Leo for quite a few years in the industry. He's now the chairman of the board for ASA and really active. And I love the fact that he's progressive in his thinking to consider hiring you based on your talent, not necessarily your location, and even considering how that will help him expand into the West Coast leadership-wise. We'll dig into that a little bit deeper in our conversation. In the meantime, with everything happening in our world today, we'd be remiss not to talk about the impact of COVID-19 on our industry. During a recent SIA webinar on the topic, an expert said we should be focused on the three C's: cash, collections, and cost. Well, certainly from an operations perspective, cash is always king. And to have cash, you need to stay on top of collections and monitor your expenses and overhead. That said, it kind of leaves out the people side of our business. I even remember you saying, to be competitive, you need to be the place talent want to come and stay. So kind of two questions for you on this topic, Carrie. How do you balance between the two, operations and people? And what have you, as a COO and as a company, been focused on most in the past few weeks?
Sure. So the three C's are relevant right now. I obviously run operations. I oversee a couple of our, two of our four businesses, and I also am running finance and accounting right now. You're right. Never has it been more important to be really have a fundamental tight understanding of our cash flow, understand the risk. So a couple quick things on what we're doing and what we have done that, and, you know, and I guess a couple of plugs or shout outs to people in our organization. One of the things that I'm really proud of is that early on, our head of HR built a business continuity team, and this was a cross-functional team really designed to ensure that we were out in front of all these changes in terms of not only planning for moving remote. We moved, you know, our entire workforce, including, you know, our thousands of consultants, temporary workers, to remote workforce within a day, essentially. And we did that very seamlessly. You know, we had put a lot of really, our CIO, Jeff, had put, you know, with his team, had put good sort of processes, structures in place to allow us to securely move our workforce remotely. In terms of the cross-functional business continuity team, this included just incredible communications. I know you're no stranger to this, in terms of sort of being out in front, in terms of letting people know what to expect. And then as they went through this, having significant support structures in place to support these shifts, not only in business, but to a big dramatic change in life for people. From, you know, working from home, trying to homeschool, balance everything, it's pretty remarkable. So very, very proud that at least in terms of proactive, out in front kind of business continuity planning, I think we've done a superb job. I structured a team called Business Impact Planning Team. So this is really looking at, you know, sort of the real-time impacts of our business and really starting to model kind of what are the implications? Where do we expect? I ran a, you know, risk assessment with each of our business units, as well as all of our shared services, looking at functionally as well as in the businesses, what are we expecting? What are we already seeing? What are some of the leading indicators? And then what do we expect to see in terms of revenue, you know, revenue decline by business unit, by sector, by line of business, and really trying to get our arms around and build a model for, you know, what do we expect to see? And then what are the decisions that we're going to make as a result? And that, I would tell you, you know, this sort of cross-functional team included, obviously, Leo and myself and members of the executive team, but our finance organization as well. And I would tell you collectively, what I am really proud of our organization is that, you know, we are running a strong organization and such that we can make these decisions thoughtfully. So when I talk about, you know, you hear of some companies making sort of drastic, sometimes even feeling like rash decisions, we are moving what I would call swiftly and thoughtfully. That is one of the things that I'm also proud of as well. We are obviously thinking a lot about cash, recognizing that some of our industries that are going to be hit, we may see, you know, slowness in cash coming in, receivables and so on. And our collections efforts, keeping very, very tight on that. We've kind of doubled down on our collections efforts. And then our cost structure, looking at, you know, our expense structure today, are we structured well for an organization of our size today? What do we believe is going to be the impact, and what decisions do we need to contemplate as we consider, you know, the path forward? So that has occupied a lot of my time as of late. And coming back to your question also about the people, it's a really important one. And when I speak about, you know, something I'm extremely passionate about, having spent my whole career in professional services and in the temporary staffing space where you have a primarily hourly, you know, consultant workforce, my belief is that if you create an organization where consultants want to come and stay, meaning you build community and you build an organization that is really a destination for, you know, talent, for the our best workers. And I'm talking about billable workers who are out in front of our clients every day. Certainly, we need to build the best internal organization. But if we can also focus on being the best organization for a mobile workforce, then I do believe that, you know, then that leads to revenue preservation, it leads to loyalty and retention. And it leads to all these things that, you know, I think allow us to weather the storm of these sort of big impacts, you know, better, if that makes sense.
It does. I mean, your employment brand today means more than ever. When things turn, you want to be the company people want to work with and avoid reputation and damage control by taking care of people. Unfortunately, even though we're in the people business, a lot of companies haven't been looking at the three C's, and those companies are now faced with a situation where they have to make more rash decisions, and they will feel the long-term impact. I guess while some compare this to a recession and others, I've even heard a combination of a recession, a hurricane, and 9/11, it's clearly something new. And the unknown of its lasting impact on businesses and our economy is certainly causing a lot of fear and anxiety. So, Carrie, what lessons can we take forward as an industry and as companies when we finally see ourselves moving in a positive direction?
A number of things come to mind, and I think none of these in and of themselves will sound earth-shattering, but I do think they're really important. I mean, the staffing industry, one of the best things, or one of the things that we really think coming out of this recognizes the need to be nimble. So as we look at our organization and think, hey, we've really made some swift decisions, and some of these have happened naturally. For example, of course, we've seen some slowing in certain sectors right now, the airline industry, real estate, I mean, the obvious industries and other downstream industries that are impacted. And we're seeing the most resilient of our sectors lining up around us. So we have a large clinical organization, clinical research organization, Advanced Clinical. So they're seeing some slowing here and there. No surprise, we run clinical trials for organizations, and when they can't travel, there is some impacts there just physically on our ability to do some of this work. But we're also seeing growth areas in other areas, obviously an increase in certain, whether it's testing for COVID. We work with a client who has developed, the testing, nursing sector, healthcare workers, certain drug development. I mean, we're obviously seeing significant demand for experts in all of these areas, whether it's staffing or consulting or outsourcing. In others of our businesses, we're also seeing some real, highlights. And whether that's in our creative business Wonderland, similarly, certain biotech pharma and healthcare providers, hospitals, et cetera, they have ongoing demand to kind of quickly shift, whether it's their creative services, digital services, to be able to respond to, communicate, support, product development. So quickly sort of shifting our focus and our go-to-market strategies around the growth sectors. And the more nimble you are and the more quickly you're able to kind of shift, lift and shift, as I say, whether those consultants can be, quickly move from one engagement to another in a growth sector, we're seeing those are the companies that are faring better, that have that ability to kind of quickly shift their business and focus in the growth areas. And I think we're pretty well positioned to do that. And you have to be able to do it quickly and do it credibly. So that's, I think, one lesson learned. You don't want to be caught flat-footed. I mean, the staffing industry is so dynamic. And one of my long-term colleagues had once said, we need to reinvent ourselves every 5 years and we're going to be out of business. You always need to be peering around the corners, thinking about what's coming ahead, not only in the sectors and industries we're supporting, but how we do it. Thinking about, just a mobile workforce mentality. I think for sure this industry is going to change permanently. So we think, hey, we were actually pretty well positioned to work remotely quickly. And we are hearing that companies and industries that have that ability to do remote workforce, are faring well. It's helping us rethink even how we go to market as a firm. If we can break down some of the geographic walls potentially as we go to market, that helps us expand our reach in terms of how we recruit. So there's quite a, we're really sort of looking at what are some of these kind of real-time lessons and taking those away and figuring out how to leverage those more fully. So I think those are some of the key lessons we've learned thus far through all of this.
Thank you for your insights, Carrie. The whole lift, shift, pivot, and ability to be agile is really important, as well as looking around corners and seeing what's ahead. I guess if you think about it, people have been talking about implementing a remote workforce model for some time, just as an example, but many companies really couldn't wrap their arms around it and refused to really adapt to it. It's been right in front of them and could have made transitioning during this time a whole lot easier. But like you said, you can actually do it, and you did. Something like, I believe you said, 1,000 people in a day. That's unreal. Kudos to you and the entire team. Now, we all need to pay closer attention to those things that are right in front of us. That said, let's transition back to you, Carrie, and you have spent the bulk of your career in professional services. If you were to highlight 3 key milestones that got you to where you are today, what would they be?
Sure. I think reflecting on my career, I think, a few things come to mind. So for early career, mid-career, and maybe later career, one of the key milestones in my career that really sort of set the stage for even where I am today is the early work I did at a firm called Parson Group. CEO of that firm, Dan Weinfurter, it was a startup at the time. And their fundamental belief was it was, sort of serving an underserved niche in the marketplace. Super interesting in the world of accounting, finance, and governance. But, when I reflect on it, I think what was most interesting about that, number one, I was quite young and I started my career in sales. So I've always really sort of considered myself moving into management, but always you know, always have had a real strong sales background and a sales bent and sales mentality. We were extensively trained in that organization in consultants of selling, not just, you know, all the fundamentals. And it's actually become part of the kind of the DNA for how I operate in terms of this dual mindset, in terms of being really a client partner, solving critical business problems for our clients, but also being an employer of choice to the consulting community. I mean, this goes back 25 years or so. And still that mentality applies today, which is, you know, if you really focus on being like that employer of choice, that, you know, it translates into flawless client service and delivery. And that's really how you build a growth engine. And I was fortunate to work with exceptional leaders there, from our our CEO, Dan, to other leaders. I had terrific leaders, women and men, who helped, you know, me accelerate from being one of our top salespeople into management, and then eventually to a managing director role, which moved me out here to California in 2000 to open an office for them. Eventually the company was sold, but that was pretty foundational for me, and I'm still very close with so many people from that company. You know, later on in my career, you know, I worked with a number of different companies where I do feel like my role was leadership, whether that's managing director or regional leaders, but always with an eye toward kind of solving or fixing some broken businesses or helping remove obstacles to growth, and was able to do that at a few different firms of different sizes. And, you know, I actually mid-career joined Deloitte & Touche and worked in the healthcare business there. And I think what was fundamental about not only working at just a world-class organization like Deloitte, I was in the risk advisory group in healthcare sector, and we were selling, you know, very significant solutions to large healthcare providers like Sutter Health and so on. But just working on and having access to large pursuit teams and selling, you know, $20 million plus deals, and having, you know, being part of a, you know, $100 million plus sector, just the size and scale of that, you know, just and the billing rates and the work that we were doing and the quality of our services and relationships. I not only continue to build perfect relationships, but it gives you a really important window, I think, when you work in large organizations, to see like what is possible, you know, and I sort of have continued to have that eye when I've come into other organizations about, you know, geez, you know, we're on par in terms of our quality with these large organizations. So it's really helped me evaluate pricing models, price, you know, schedules, and other go-to-market strategies. The third milestone that, you know, has really got me to where I am today, of course, was I was recruited from another organization to join Accretive. And at the time, Accretive Solutions, you know, is a $75 million private equity backed organization. And I came in a leadership role, but really was running California, Northern California, which is our largest market. Company had sort of stagnated, or the market, you know, was kind of sliding sideways a bit from a revenue standpoint. And, you know, I was able really just, I think part of it just being an outsider coming in, I was able to kind of quickly assess challenges, you know, toward growing. This was back in 2012. And so made recommendations, made some of those changes. And then we, sure enough, you know, the market was growing. Our CEO at the time, Rich Moran, tapped me and said, hey, can you kind of go do that for the rest of the organization? And I was promoted to run all sales and operations. And then eventually Rich, who was a board member for Accretive, was recruited to another role. He had taken on the CEO role for a period of time. He recommended me to be promoted to president and CEO eventually of Accretive. And what was monumental about that, beyond just becoming CEO and leading the organization, and I had incredible leadership team, and again, terrific, just super talented and bright individuals. The way I viewed it and the way I talked about it was that, you know, at the end of the day, we were all business partners. But, you know, it's eventually you need to have kind of the tipping boat or a person who can make the ultimate decision. And I did that. But I really did view it as a partnership. A fundamental tenet of Advanced Group is servant leadership. And I wholeheartedly believe that construct. You know, I've always said that I view sort of the corporate or the leadership organization more at the sort of the bottom of an inverted triangle, and that we exist to be in support of the businesses, and that's our role, not to sit on top. And that mentality, I mean, an incredible culture at Accretive, and, you know, that mentality, I think, you know, just allowed us to have a really exceptional firm with a lot of people who took a lot of pride in their work. Eventually, of course, able to work on the due diligence and eventual sale of our company to Resources Global. I'm happy to talk more about that, but, you know, those were three pretty pivotal experiences that, you know, really just not only gave me great experience that you know, that plays out in spades again here at Advanced and throughout my career. But the relationships I built along the way and the knowledge and the learnings that I had are just instrumental.
I can definitely see how coming from other companies and industries as an organization where you didn't spend the entire bulk of your career in one sector per se will add a lot of value for Advanced. On the topic of the C-suite, actually, something you said before really stood out to me. Titles don't mean anything if you don't have responsibility and authority. If you have responsibility without authority, it doesn't work. I can imagine when looking at opportunities like the one you're in today, a newly created role coming in from the outside, that was actually pretty important as part of your interviewing process. But how did you know, Carrie? How did you know that you would have both? And what types of questions should be asked or behaviors to look for when interviewing for a role like yours? I mean, it's one thing for people to say that they're ready for a COO, but accepting someone in the role and giving them permission to take action is, of course, different.
Right. Yeah. I would love to be able to share anything that can, you know, sort of accelerate that process or make it more of a silver bullet for others. Because I would be the first to tell you, I learned some of it the hard way. I've been in roles where I had all the responsibility, but not the authority to make change. And I blame myself, of course, for even accepting roles like that, you know, earlier on in my career. And all that really leads to when you have all the responsibility and no authority is stress. So, you know, clearly there's like nothing worse than seeing and knowing what changes need to happen, but not being able to affect them. So, you know, I've also on the flip side have had incredible opportunities as well. And I've just gotten better at asking overt questions, but some of it's also reading and understanding what the CEO is saying and even the attitude and belief of where that individual is at in his or her career. Point blank, when meeting with Leo, I think the key difference, because I did consider a couple other CEO roles actually of smaller organizations when I was considering leaving RGP, and I've been contacted and I've said that, you know, in one of the instances, I had multiple dialogues with the founder and CEO of a tech company here in the Bay Area. And I, you know, it was sort of like he was saying all the right things. Like I founded the company and I realized that it's time for me that, you know, I can't take the company to the next level and I need to back away. And I was hearing all the right things, but it was just evident to me that even just emotionally, he wasn't there, wasn't ready. And I knew that for me, that was a big red flag. With Leo, it was quite different. You know, first of all, he was upfront that he's not intending to leave the organization, so, and that he's fully committed, but it's more that he's recognized the company's gotten to a certain growth period over time, and he realizes, you know, he really needs additional leadership to help him, you know, I call it moving up the maturity curve, moving from, you know, what's been a highly successful private business to operating a bit more, you know, as an enterprise, and what that means, and that doesn't mean you layer in a whole, you know, a bunch of process and so on for the sake of process, it just means that some of the decisions that we need to make going forward are structurally more, you know, are important for company that's 250 going to 500 million and beyond. So the short answer to that, Leslie, is that, you know, it's sort of not just the answers you hear to your questions that you're asking, you know, that I asked throughout these interviews. It's also even the body language and like just reading and feeling and understanding, you know, whether the company is really fundamentally ready to give that authority and responsibility. And with Leo, I mean, I walked through scenarios and said, let's play this out. And how do you see this? And he was very quick to say, well, you know, you would do this and you'd be doing this and you'd be running this and this would be your call. And I'm, you know, and I was so, and I'm part of the executive team, of course. And again, you're right, the titles don't matter at all, because I've always said it's really not about control at all. It's just that I'm very happy to take on responsibility. I've always been in roles that are high responsibility, but I just need to be able to influence and make the impact. Then I'm 100% there. So that's kind of the journey of how I got to knowing that this would be the case here.
That's great advice. And you're right. Being able to actually see the person and see how they react to you and some of your questions, and just you can tell emotionally how they're feeling about it and if they're really ready for the role. Speaking of being ready for change, not only adding the COO role, but also remotely. So Carrie, you live in San Francisco and yet Advanced Group is headquartered in Chicago. How do you make that work? And do you believe companies who once thought that everyone needed to be in the same location will think differently in the wake of COVID-19? I mean, obviously there'll be a changing world as it relates to the workforce being remote, but in the C-suite position, how do you make that work? I, for one, believe it can happen and it opens the door to new possibilities when it comes to finding the best talent. But I'd love to get your opinion as someone who's been doing this for some time now.
Yeah, we're getting a quick lesson in just how well it works to have a mobile and more remote workforce. I would say we're certainly headquartered in Chicago, and Advanced Clinical is, you know, headquartered in Deerfield. So what that means is obviously the bulk of our employees, including our shared service organization, reside for the most part in and around Chicago. And I do think for sure there's some importance to having a nucleus of individuals. I mean, I would love to tell you that there's no impact on remote working and that at the end of the day, you know, we should all just be able to, like, anyone can work from anywhere. I was flying to Chicago regularly, very regularly. I mean, at least once a month for a while, a couple of weeks a month. It's really hard to replace the person-to-person collaboration that does happen, even the kind of impromptu things that happen when you are walking down the hall and you kind of just get to, you go have a huddle with someone. We're obviously remotely huddling, so we are very active with video conferencing and doing all that you can. I call it like, it's a distant second to in-person collaboration. But on the flip side, there are absolutely, we're finding that, you know, it's actually incredible what you can get done remotely. And the new norm is forcing those things to happen quickly. Like, it's actually forcing some greater collaboration because you do have to kind of go out of your way a bit more to make sure that you're communicating well. And that, you know, if you can't physically shadow someone, for example, we're doing, you know, we're hiring people into our accounting functions and so on and trying to figure out on the fly, how do we do remote training and how do you kind of shadow someone when you're remote? And all those things are happening real time. So I would say I feel like I've had the best of both worlds. I love Chicago. Almost seems like every company, with the exception of maybe one or two, has been based in Chicago. I'm no stranger to Chicago. I've been traveling to Chicago for 20 plus years very regularly. And so I love that, you know, I've been able to fly in and have those in-person meetings and we kind of really, like, you know, structure those and fill those days with the things that just you feel like maybe just can't always get done via video conference or remote. And then I have the luxury of living where I live. Obviously, I've, you know, been here in the Bay Area for 20 years and being able to actually come into the San Francisco office as well, which has a, you know, roughly 20 or so people between our clinical and Wonderland businesses. You know, I've built great relationships with that group as well. So for me, I feel like it is the best of both worlds, notwithstanding the fact that, you know, right now I think everybody's missing some of the human interaction. And that has more to do with COVID than it has to do with the idea of, like, you know, working 100% remotely. That's what I see.
I love the fact that Leo was open-minded to it, and I do hope many other leaders will take that lead and recruit for talent, not necessarily based on location, and think of it as an opportunity. Speaking of being on the road, you have three kids, and of course, pre-COVID-19, you were traveling more than ever, and you also firmly believe you can't do it all without making sacrifices. When you say you'd like to redefine what it means to have it all, what do you mean exactly? And what advice do you have for others trying to figure it out for themselves?
Yeah, you know, when I think about defining what it means to have it all, I think sometimes we view the, you know, maybe the pie as being finite. And in terms of sacrifices, you know, if you, for example, as a woman leader, traveling a bit and really doing what I love to do, that means I'm not home all the time, and that's a sacrifice. And we have a tendency to, I think, you know, myself included, to think of that as a loss, like that's, you know, so our children suffer as a result. Well, I'm very fortunate, you know, my husband is, you know, I really view this as a great partnership. You know, he's a working professional as well, but we've been able to partner over time. And when I've had, you know, this particular role, you know, which I knew would require a bit more travel, he's sort of been our anchor more at home, certainly right now as we homeschool and do all that. But I think that sometimes we are left with the feeling that, like, geez, there's always, you know, there's always a sacrifice. And I think having it all, I think, can mean that we all have to go a little easier on ourselves. I guess that's kind of how I view it, you know, is that we all, you know, having it all may mean that, you know, that a sacrifice isn't truly a sacrifice. It's part of, like, almost like expanding the pie. It allows, you know, those decisions are all part of the equation, and they lead to maybe perhaps what works well for us. And I'm also would tell you, like, I think it's important not to judge anyone for those choices that they make. Some people are dual working parents, very common. And so they have external help, and, like, everyone needs to do what they need to do to make that work. And I think we sometimes have a tendency to view that as, well, that means, you know, our kids suffer as a result, or this suffer as well. You know, I think if we're all viewing it as partnership. It's just a new network, an extended partnership, however that gets done. So I've really tried over the years, and as I've gotten later on in my career, to just take a breath and just, you know, go a little easier on ourselves for those decisions and feel great about them. I know that I'm very fortunate that we're able to do what we're able to do. And I feel every day for people who have to balance so many things. So that's my key takeaway, I guess, is that, you know, we all need to go easy on ourselves and a little bit easy on each other with, you know, how we view what having it all means.
I agree. It's really easy to look at others and want to have, quote unquote, everything that they have, or the saying, trying to keep up with the Joneses. But you need to remember that every life and situation is different, and try not to judge people for what they're doing and just focus on doing the absolute best for your family. And I really love, Carrie, this resonated greatly with me, how you talked about forgiving yourself. And I have to say, I'll wake up at 3 a.m. and think, oh my gosh, you know, did I remember to do X, Y, and Z for Grayson? And I need to just be okay with, I did enough. I did the best that I could do, and, you know, sleep through the night. So anyway, with that, Carrie, we're coming up on the end, but I do have a couple of things I want to touch on quickly. You recently joined the advisory board for Estrella Private Markets. Tell us a bit about its mission and why you felt it was important to join.
Sure. So Estrella is a technology platform, a software platform. It's part of AST, which is the American, you may know, American Stock Transfer. My friend and colleague, Karine Schneider, is the president of Estrella, and she really built this business. She has spent her entire career in the space of not only stock administration, total rewards, equity administration. She's had really an incredible career, and really what, you know, I so appreciate about Karine as well is that she also has a personal mission to support not only women leaders, but also funding for women, women-owned businesses. She started a business to provide access to women for venture funding. And she asked me, we actually have it's a really interesting board for Estrella, a lot of different folks, including key leaders who run stock administration at, you know, the big tech companies out here. So it's a joy to be part of that board. And because it's not only interesting and it's part of what I did in my last career at Accretive. She ran our equity outsourcing business. It's also a great, you know, learning opportunity for me as well, and great exposure to some incredible people.
That's fantastic. And Carrie, it's great to see you on their board. I know you'll make a lasting impact. It sounds like a wonderful organization. Okay, we're going to close by asking you one of my favorite questions, because I always find these extraordinarily insightful. I'd love for you to share the best piece of advice you have ever received.
Yeah, I always come back to this, and it just is the one bit of advice, and my dad knows this because it's a bit of advice my dad gave me many, many years ago. I think I was a teenager when he told me this, but somehow it's just been the most simple and maybe just the easiest thing for me to remember, and it stayed with me forever. Years ago, we were talking, and he said, stay above the noise. You know, that was his bit of advice, just stay above the noise. And I think at the time, he was talking more about high school drama, probably, and just, you know, not getting caught up in the web of just drama and all that goes on. But honestly, that same lesson has applied throughout my entire career. And why it matters to me, this concept of staying above the noise. You know, I've been managing people now, right, for 25 plus years and large teams and so on. And it's not at all to say that we don't need to dig in and deal with issues and challenges. I mean, that is at the epicenter of what I do regularly. But I really do believe fundamentally as a leader and leading, you know, just really leading with integrity and this idea of no drama. I always say I'm a no drama mama. Like, just I don't have time for it. And so I feel like when you rise above those things and really go to the root of things, like when, you know, and get people talking more directly to each other when they have issues and challenges, it just sets a tone and culture, in my view, that's more about like, hey, like we don't have time for that. We got stuff to do. We are on a mission to get stuff done and do things well. And we don't have time for kind of drama by drama, what I mean is things that distract and detract from what we're trying to do. So that has been a mantra of mine forever. I don't think that my dad told me that, he had any idea that, you know, here I am many years later that I still think about that, but it applies in business and of course in life with my children and their friends. And so that's my one bit of advice that I got that has really stuck with me.
I love it. Thank you for sharing. I'll be taking that with me for sure. The no drama mama. I can see how it would distract from what we're trying to do as a society and even a business. Well, we'll do our best to stay above the noise. And Carrie, we had so many things to talk about, your experience working with private equity companies and also how you help rise up others because you've had so much help in your career with others really stepping up to help you. But we are simply out of time. So if someone would like to reach out to you and learn more, including perhaps the topics we couldn't cover here today, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Definitely LinkedIn. I try to check LinkedIn like at least maybe once a day or every couple of days. I'm not on there all the time, but you can certainly message me. I'm very easy to find. And then I have a Twitter handle. I think it's Carrie B says. I have other information. I think those methods are better than say email and I get and phone. My preference probably initially through LinkedIn, but I am very open to talking to people. I do have people reach out quite a bit from, you know, actually people who went to Cal, you know, my business school, you know, that just want insights. And I really do try to make time for people because I'm very committed to helping, especially young leaders, do anything they can to kind of accelerate their path forward. So feel free. I'm here.
Well, Carrie, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you and having you a guest on the Edge podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure too. Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to The Edge. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to it in iTunes. Feel free to email Leslie at lvickery@clearedgemarketing.com and let us know if you have questions, would like to be a guest, or suggest a potential guest, or share topics you'd like to see in the future.